on campus
and online.
This
is URN.
Hello, and you are listening to the Identity Talk. Welcome back to hopefully some regular listeners.
It's good to have you back, Ibi.
Thank you, Donny. I've been missing for a couple of weeks now, but I'm back. I'm back, my friends. I'm back. We have a really interesting episode planned today. We'll be talking a little bit about the international student experience, and with that in mind, we actually have a couple of guests on air. But as is usual, as is customary for our show, we'll start with some introductions. So I'm Ibi. My pronouns are he and him. And since we are doing an international episode, I also thought I'd tell people where I'm from. I'm from Bangladesh. No, that is not a part of India. It's its own country. Thank you very much. And I've been living in the UK now for about 7 years, on and off. Almost all 7 years in Nottingham.
Hi, guys. My name is Donny. My pronouns are they and them. I am British born. And so, yeah, I've been here for 21 years and few months and a few days,
you
I guess.
Poor thing.
Thank you. I know. The weather.
So we've got a couple of guests with us today.
Hi, I'm Valentina. I'm Ukrainian. I use pronoun she. I live in UK. I've been here for 3 years and this is my fourth year now. I spend holidays at home, but yeah, generally living here.
Hi, guys. My name is Hemant and my pronouns are he and him. I'm from the beautiful country of India, and I'm from the south, and I've been living in India for nearly 18 years in a city called Bangalore, which is also known as the IT capital. And then I'm an international student, and I arrived in university nearly 2 years ago, and yes.
So we've got a nice mix of a couple of different countries. And if anyone has experiences from anywhere else in the world, please do feel free to message in. Our messaging system's working again, which
Finally.
Is exciting. So if anyone has any experiences that they would like to share over the course of listening to today's episode, if you want to chip in, because obviously it is very difficult to talk about a truly international experience in just an hour, even if we were able to cram in 60 different people into the room, and as it is we only have four. Any opinions, any questions, do message in. You can send us a free web text on urn1350.net. you can tweet us at urn1350, or for the really old school folks, you can text us on 07903 545 252. We'll be touching on a few different discussions today, some of them slightly more serious, some of them not. But really, to get into it, I was just wondering, coming from different countries as we do, what made you want to actually come to the UK as a student, first of all?
For me personally, the reason I opted for United Kingdom is because of the history of colonial rule. Mm-hmm. And I was really curious about the country as to how it has changed over time. And I opted for United Kingdom was because the things which we are taught in India about United Kingdom tends to be quite negative, mm-hmm, sometimes in terms of history. And that was one reason as to why I opted for United Kingdom. And my second reason is probably because economics is a pretty reputed degree, and there have been many economists, mm-hmm, from England, and it's a quite reputed degree to, yeah, get from England.
I mean, we've got a Nobel Prize winner,
yes,
at the university.
Yes, so. quite Granger. So.
You mentioned colonial rule and colonial history, and I'm just wondering whether it's the same for you in India as it was for me in Bangladesh growing up, where the education system in Bangladesh, you can either do the national education system and you can learn that in English or in Bengali. Mm-hmm. Although when I was growing up, it was mostly in Bengali. There were very few schools that actually offered it in English. But the schooling I went to was actually GCSE schooling. So it was the very much the British system of education. And it was, I went on to do GCSEs and A-levels. Well, I didn't do A-levels, but my school offered A-levels the way that they do here in the UK. So was that a similar experience for you?
So, yes, there are. So every state has its own, you know, kind of state board, as they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And every state needs to learn, every student who goes to a state school tends to learn their own regional language.
Right.
As you know, India is such a diverse country, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm, every state has its own language. So, however, the curriculum which we are taught since our first standard or first grade, as they call it in United Kingdom,
uh-huh,
is in English. So,
right.
So that's one reason as to why Indians tend to have really good English, mm-hmm, is because we are taught in English. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
So, Valentina, you came from a very different part of the world from both Hemant and myself. What was your reason for coming to the UK?
To be fair, at the time, I was only like 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. I did not have a choice myself. But
right,
in Ukraine, we have a really good reputation of education abroad, especially like economics, business degrees. So I actually came here first time to do A-levels.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Now I'm studying part-time in University of in Ukraine as well, so I'm kind of able to compare. And in school in Ukraine, level of English isn't that well. Like, for me, I had to go to the separate courses to learn the language, mm-hmm, but I started noticing that Ukrainian universities started offering master's degrees in English.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting point. And later on in the show, we'll actually be touching a little bit about language and its importance in kind of being able to fit in as an international student. I'm going to turn the question to a very different way to you, Donnie, because obviously you are British yourself. But did you ever think about going anywhere else for your higher education?
Well, I mean, okay, I am very guilty of binge-watching all those American high school movies and thinking that frat parties were amazing, that I wanted to go to Princeton or Harvard, so...
One of the Ivy Leagues. We have no idea what it means.
Totally Ivy League. I have no idea what it means, but I so badly thought America was the place. You know, it's an American dream. Big, beautiful, whatever. Besides, you know, the current government. But, to be honest... Obviously, Britain, one of the major reasons my parents moved here from the Middle East was because, as you mentioned earlier, Hemant, the degrees here are so kind of... Basically, the education system here is one of the best in the world.
It has a reputation.
A reputation for being one of the best in the world. So I think I'm just blessed that I'm able to even travel from the south of England to get to the north, because it is
sure,
a far, far, you know, it's quite far away, not as far away as your hometowns, but I think that I am very lucky to be at the University of Nottingham, and I love the fact that we have international campuses, mm-hmm, that they offer year abroads, and it's really nice to actually meet, you know, Ibi, you're one of my closest friends here at uni, and it's just been really fascinating hearing your side of the story, and it really opens your mind, and that's one of the things I really like about this university particularly.
Yeah.
So,
We will of course be turning to questions such as being able to fit in a bit later on, but to kind of ask something that seems a bit lighthearted, but actually I know when I started my undergraduate it played a very big part. There were obviously certain things that you plan in your head to kind of adjust to. So, speaking in English on a daily basis, figuring out how certain appliances work. So in Bangladesh, we don't really use vacuum cleaners because the floors aren't carpeted. So it's
tiled?
Tiled.
Yeah.
So it's just a lot easier to clean with just...
A mop.
rather than a vacuum cleaner. So we didn't have a vacuum cleaner growing up. It took me a while to get used to it. I promise I didn't get anything stuck in there, but apart from that, mind out of the gutter, Donnie. But at the same time, there were certain things that I didn't really stop to think about, and yet when I arrived here, I was just like, oh dear God, how am I going to survive here? The biggest one was the weather. I don't know about my panel, my fellow panelists, but what was it like getting, what were things that you expected and what were things you didn't prepare yourself for and just kind of went, oh God.
I wasn't ready for like diving straight into this all international experience. I was in a boarding school in North Wales, and in Ukraine I thought I had a pretty good level of English because I could make a conversation with my school teacher and stuff. But coming here, everyone with different accents.
Oh gosh, the accents.
I could not
that
adjust.
That is quite challenging, actually.
For 2 weeks, I was like looking in their faces, trying to comprehend, and like looking at their mouths, trying to identify what they were saying. But it took me only two weeks.
You do grow up thinking that there's just one British accent, don't you? I mean, you know that there's a Scottish accent, and you know that there's an Irish accent. You never experience the Welsh accent until you arrive.
Yeah.
But there isn't one English accent either. There's so many of them.
There is also a Russian accent in American movies.
Oh, yeah, gosh, yeah. So it's just, you don't expect that. That's so true.
To be honest, a lot of the times when my cousins and I go to the Middle East to visit family, a lot of them are students, or a lot of my other cousins, they learn English in Iran, but American English.
Because of the culture and the television and films.
Completely.
Yeah.
And often my cousin lives in London, so her accent is quite, you know, she's very quick when she talks, whereas I would say I'm kind of more laid back. I would take my time, and I speak kind of, not Queen's English, but kind of your standard, what you would expect from a Brit.
Uh-huh.
That's what I've been told anyway. And every time we go back, my uncle will ask my cousin a question and then look at me like, Donnie, help me, I have no idea what your cousin just said. So people, I think, often overlook the fact that it is actually so hard from learning the language, actually having to deal with different dialects.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think the reason being is because of movies, because you don't see a Scottish accent or a Wales accent in a movie.
In most, So, you certainly don't see regional ones like Nottingham. Like you don't. I have never heard the expression "Eyup me duck" before I arrived. That was a terrible impression. But until I arrived in Nottingham, and the first time someone said that, I'm like, what did you just call me? Were you insulting me? Were you I don't understand. It was so confusing.
Yeah, I personally had a similar experience too. Especially the first time when I came here, and I think I was trying to give out a statement about myself, and then there's this person who comes and says, "Oh, that's sick." And I didn't know what to expect. Is that a compliment, or is that like a negative statement?
British slang, very weird.
Yeah. And that varies from region to region. It's so frustrating.
My phrase which really got me confused was "you're right." I would come through the street and everyone who I just met like the last week would say, "Are you all right?" And I kept constantly checking on myself, like, is something like off?
Right. Yeah, because you're used to being asked, "How are you?" or something like that.
That's taught.
Yeah, but how are you all? I haven't thought about that one,
actually. That's really interesting. You're right, mate.
Yeah. Gosh. I did see you nodding your head along him when I mentioned it slightly earlier, but the weather was such a pain.
I can't imagine what it must have been like to move from like a beautiful, hot country such as India and coming here. I feel sorry for you.
Literally, Donnie, the three weathers which we have, as we say it in India, is hot, hotter, and hotter.
Yes, yes. I mean, I don't think the coldest weather that I ever experienced before I arrived here was like double digits. And when I arrived here in October, it was about 8 degrees the first day I landed. And I was just like, what fresh hell is this? It was terrifying. And then actually seeing... Also, am I the only one who, the first time I experienced snow, it wasn't nowhere near as like magical and romantic as I thought it was going to be? It was just, it looked like a bunch of birds had exploded and their feathers were falling on you. But it was also like, oh my God, this is actually really cold.
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, for my winter, this last winter was the first time I saw snow.
Okay.
And then I got so excited.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is snow. I've never seen snow in my life.
And then
they were like, no, this is not snow, mate.
But also it's that you learn to hate the snow. It's like,
I love
it's
snow.
When it's falling, but then when it freezes.
Okay, fair enough.
When
everything
freezes,
is slippery.
Everything.
And there's so many hills in Nottingham.
There are way too many hills
And I'm
in
so... prone to accidents, so...
I know, I'm really clumsy. So I think we've kind of touched on some relatively light-hearted words, but actually, when you really think about it, the way these kinds of interactions affect your day-to-day experiences is a very big deal.
University Radio Nottingham.
Oh, I love that echo. I keep forgetting that echo's there sometimes.
I forget how long it is.
I know. It's never ending. It's still playing in the background. We've just turned it down.
Yeah.
Welcome back to this week's episode of The Identity Talk. We are talking about the international student experience today. And Donnie and myself, Ibi, as regular hosts of the show, are joined by Valentina and Hemant. So thank you very, very much for coming on the show today. For people who have just tuned in, we were talking in the first section kind of just broadly about the international student experience. We touched a little bit about things like language, unexpected things like experiencing different dialects. We talked about the weather, because it wouldn't be a show about England unless you talked about the weather. But one of the kind of undercurrents throughout our discussion was this idea of fitting in and fitting out or standing out. And all of us here in the studio today have been here in the UK for over a year. And what I'm really curious to talk about is how recent British politics have played a part in shaping our experiences in international students, if they have shaped experiences in international students. I know it has in my case, but I also know that that doesn't apply universally. To give a bit of background, Brexit happened. I know many of us are still in denial about that, but it did happen. At the very least, a referendum happened. We don't know if Brexit's happening anytime soon. But that's a topic for another day. I'll stop with the politics now. But what was particularly interesting and very worrying during the entire Brexit campaign and in every election around the world since then was the fact that we've had a lot of focus on immigrant identities. We've had a lot of focus on international identities, including, interestingly, students who or individuals who really don't fall in the scope of Brexit. So I'm from Bangladesh, but I distinctly remember facing harassment immediately following the Brexit vote, being told things like, you need to go home now. And every time I kind of would respond with, what are you talking about? Brexit hasn't changed anything with regards to my visa. But it was slightly frightening seeing how strongly linked something like Brexit was with just generally the idea of being an outsider. And I'm wondering whether that was a similar experience for my fellow panelists, whether it was something slightly different. I mean, Hemant, you were mentioning during the break that you are, of course, also the International Students Officer, and you've had more of a formal association with the decision as well. So if, I was wondering if you could maybe share some of that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I had dealt with a lot of issues, but firstly, I'd like to speak about my own problem, which I've had. I mean, one of the prime reasons, as I was stating, to come to UK was, as you said, you know, colonialism and trying to see how things have changed.
Sure.
And I was under the impression in India that the British tend to be more accepting. And this changed my perception personally after Brexit. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame the whole of British, but it's just a vote which has been taken by the whole of England.
Yeah.
So, coming back to the issues, I think there have been a lot of issues on campus with international students. I had conversations with a lot of PhD students, especially they were quite nervous with regards to funding, if they will have adequate funding by the end of their PhD, mm-hmm. because many of them are funded for their projects which they uptake.
Yeah.
And the second issue recently which arised was with regards to the tutors in halls. It used to be the case that the tutors in halls could you know, do the pastoral care and take care of the whole students. But for international students, it has been reduced to 20 hours. So,
really? That's not something I was aware of.
Yeah, so...
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, so now the main problem comes is since the tutor's work is taken into account as hours of work.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Many of the PhD students tend to go to lectures and teach, you know, the other tutorials which are taken as work as well. And thereby, which reduces the number of hours which they can spend as tutors in halls. And that has been quite a big issue with recent changes in terms of immigration. I mean, it has nothing to deal with Brexit, but I feel it has been a huge detriment for international students.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've had a couple of texts in, and I'm going to read them out throughout the show, but one that seems particularly pertinent for the discussion we're having now, I'm just going to read it out. It's an anonymous text that says, Brexit scared me. My brother-in-law came from Germany 20 years ago, and he's still worried that the UK isn't his home anymore. Now, Valentina, you are from a European country. The Ukraine doesn't have EU links with the UK, but I'm just wondering whether your experience was any different, because from my personal experience, some of the aggression with regards to Brexit was less to do with nationality and more to do with race. And I'm wondering whether you might have a slightly different take on Brexit. I mean, did it affect you in any way?
To be fair, I don't have much to say on this, especially in the light that Ukraine just recently had a visa free entrance to Europe, so I think, like, from my perspective, my position kind of changed in a positive way, I would say.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't know, like, with regards to students, I don't see whether there would be much changed in terms of, like, immigration allowance. Did you mention something like that?
Well, it was more just, I think what Hemant was talking about was the 20-hour work limit that you have per week during term time.
Correct.
And that's something I'm very familiar with as a postgraduate student myself. But I think it was that certain... At least when I have never been a hall tutor, so I can't speak from experience, but I do know that certain jobs fall outside that 20-hour limit.
Mm.
But now, since Brexit and since renewed immigration laws, more jobs have been included in that 20-hour kind of time frame. That's a maximum that you can do 20 hours a week as an international of work, which sounds like a lot, but when you're doing a day-to-day job like being a tutor, if that's reduced on top of the fact that you are also trying to teach to gain a bit more money, I can see that having a negative effect on your ability to be a tutor, and on the flip side, on the students who rely on you for advice and support. So I can see how, in many ways, I can see how that would actually make it feel like international students are less suitable to be tutor, so less internationals would be actually be hired in that position. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also problematic, because it just puts the blame on the students rather than the system.
Absolutely. The university has been trying to tackle that issue, and it has been taken seriously.
Glad to hear
and,
that.
And apart from that... personally, for me, so this is my final year. And
right.
For my master's, I'm planning to consider a different country for my education.
Nice.
I feel that I would like to have a better experience in terms of how the country is and how the people are different to England.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah.
I think something that does affect a lot in terms of our ability as international students to fit in is language. And that's something we touched on in a slightly more lighthearted way in the first half, but I also realise how much of an impact it actually has. And we've had two very interesting and very thoughtful texts that have been sent in. I'm just going to read both of the texts out. We can respond to them if we like. We can just leave them as open statements and see what our experiences are, but I'm just going to read them out. One of them says that as an international student who came from an international school, why does everyone English think that I'm American? And that's an interesting question. We will be getting to that, but I just want to read the other one out as well. I have a stronger English accent than my sister. She gets told to go home all the time. Africans have been in the UK for years, yet we are now considered quote-unquote visitors. There's, of course, an anonymous text message, but I'm just, I'm assuming, apologies if this is incorrect, but I'm assuming from the nature of the text that the message came from a black British student talking about how race seems to play a part in fitting in and fitting out. Going to the first question on why does everyone English seem to assume that they're American, any thought? I've actually had that asked to me, even though I always assumed my English was a bit more neutral. I know it's not perfect Queen's English, but I thought it was more British than American until I arrived in the UK.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I always assumed that the English that is taught in international schools is usually American English, and I only say this because I know in Iran that they do that. So I probably am completely wrong. Maybe it's different in other schools, but also a lot of the English that I guess people do have access to is American English because of media and film and song and, you know, adverts, whatever. So I think that's probably why people might assume that you're an American, because your accent might have a slight tinge of, you know, maybe you exaggerate certain vowels to make you sound more American than English. Mm-hmm. For example, with the letter R, or
yeah, that's the big one, isn't it?
Or, you know, glottal stops, for example. So you might say, I don't know, butter instead of butter. I don't know. Ah. I don't know. But like, I think it's maybe the way in which you. I don't know how to. That's the only thought
that's,
I have.
That's
about
a really,
it, really
interesting one, because as far as grammar is concerned, I learned English grammar. I learned how to spell with an O-U instead of just an O.
Oh, okay.
So I learned English grammar. I learned British English grammar. But you're absolutely right. The media I consumed was very American. I can see him just nodding his head along with that. I'm guessing it's a source of similar experience for you.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, coming from India, for example, the main difference was in when I came to England, I went to this particular store. And then I said, "What are you look?" They asked me, "What are you looking for?" I said, "I'm looking for pants." But I actually meant trousers.
Yes.
But I didn't know that it was called trousers. And then I realized that it's mainly because of the media in India from which I gathered that particular word.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting one. Now, Valentina, you were talking about how you once you did your A-level education in the UK, so you were here slightly prior to starting university as well, and you talked about how you did language classes. What was that? What kind of experience was that like? Because you were talking earlier on about kind of your growth in English as a language here.
I was learning English for quite a lot of years, and I never really thought about like the difference. Mm-hmm.
I can see that it's something that perhaps you wouldn't necessarily think about until you suddenly experience it from a different side of the coin. It certainly, I mean, I didn't think about my accent particularly either way until I actually arrived here, and then suddenly people started assuming things. But I also do find it interesting when just kind of going back to the text a little bit, if you have an American accent, people are quite comfortable to assume that you are from the US. Mm-hmm. But if you have a British accent, they'll still ask you where you're from.
True.
And that is something I've noticed since arriving here, and I don't know what it is. I don't know whether for some reason people seem to think the States is more of a melting pot multiculturally.
Yeah, despite
the fact that the UK is actually, at least racially speaking, quite a multi-ethnic country. Yeah. So I find it very interesting when if someone has a good British accent but they're not white. And I think that goes back a little bit to the second text that was sent in to us about the student who said that she has they mentioned a sister, which is why I said she, that they have a stronger English English accent than their sister, and their sister keeps being told to go back home because they're of an African ethnicity.
I mean, for me, it's always whenever someone sees my name, particularly my last name, they always ask me, okay, where are you actually from?
Oh, I hate that.
And I hate that because I'm not evidently of colour because I'm white passing. Mm-hmm. And I have discussed this, like we have discussed this on previous shows.
But you have fairer skin.
I have a fairer skin and I don't have curly hair like a lot of my family do, and just small things like that. But it's interesting actually that if you do have a slightly Americanized, can I say, is it Americanized accent, that people aren't as maybe intrusive or they don't question you as much. Mm. I do wonder why that's the case.
That's an interesting one. And I mean, people are quite, for a country that's quite so reserved, because I do think that British culture is quite resonant, which is odd for me because I come from a very personal, very tactile culture. It's all about hugs and talking, and the very first question you ask is just all of your personal details, because that's just how we are as a culture. So I find it fascinating how a culture that is so reserved, all that reservation, all that filter goes out the window the minute they're like, where are you from?
Yeah.
And they will start digging in to try and find something. I don't know what it is. It makes me uncomfortable at times, even if I know that the questions are just plain curiosity. And in most cases, in fairness, they are just plain curiosity. But sometimes makes me feel a little bit uncomfortable because it's just like they're trying to probe what you're planning on doing in this country. And I don't know why. I mean, there's an underlying current of racism. We shouldn't deny that. But
yeah. I mean, likewise, I've faced that question many a times, and for example, they'll be like, they'll ask me questions like, why UK? Well, why in England? I mean, it's a plain question as to why you chose England.
Sure.
Yeah, but it can be taken in a different sense as to why you opted for England.
Mm. Yeah. And I do get very curious about what you're planning on doing afterwards as well. I find that sometimes a bit like, why is that your business? Why do you need to know if I'm planning on staying in this country or not?
To be fair, when I was applying to UK and we had to make a covering letter, I would say, to like apply for visa, I was actually advised not to mention I'm planning to stay here and work. And I was kind of interested, why is that?
That's a fascinating tip.
They would advise me to write in my covering letter that I would like to get some knowledge from your excellent education and come back and apply it in Ukraine. That was
flatter
a weird
them.
Thing.
Flatter them.
Yeah.
That seems to work a lot. I do find, and I'll be the first to admit that there are a lot of experiences in the UK that have been extremely positive for me. There have been a lot of parts of my life that I'm a lot more comfortable with in the UK, and far be it from me to deny that. But at the same time, and apologies if it's getting slightly too serious, but I do find that there's an undercurrent of racism in the UK that many people aren't willing to talk about, because it's not the type of explosive, violent racism that you see, for example, in the US, but it's there. And I actually think it's quite worrying how many experiences are kind of just like, oh, but I'm just being curious. And like, no, you're really, I mean, yes, you are, but what's the reason for your curiosity? Why are you trying to dig down that hole?
And yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, for example, in my first year when I came to United Kingdom, the main culture shock for me was drinking as alcohol. Ah. Alcohol as the center of the life. Mm-hmm. And I personally do drink sometimes on casual occasions. But, you know, it's not like a regular thing which happens in England, where freshers tend to binge drink every day of the week as freshers. And that was quite surprising to me. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't willing to accept, you know, drinking every single day. And I think that was one of the prime factors as to why I got excluded from the group, because I don't drink. So.
Yeah, even I've had experiences like that, to be honest. It is a huge culture here, particularly in the young.
I do think on that note, because you particularly mentioned freshers, and I think what I do find a positive thing is that a lot of these kinds of tensions and a lot of this kind of fitting in, not fitting in, seems to become less important as we go further into our education. Mm. And I do think actually a large part of that is down to the fact that and I'm sharing this purely anecdotally here, so I'm not citing any statistics, but I do know for a fact that many of my British friends would specifically talk about the fact that they grew up in smaller villages or small towns. Those particular towns weren't particularly multicultural. And because of that, they often didn't realize that things that they were asking me or things that they were doing to me may have been slightly problematic. And what I do think is quite positive about a university environment is that it lets both sides grow. It lets us as internationals experience English culture and British culture. But it also kind of opens up many British students to a slightly wider international experience without actually leaving the country. And I do think that's positive, even though the early stages of it may come with some kind of tensions and some bumps. But at the same time, there are times I wish that that kind of understanding could be applied to the country as a whole and not just in university. That would be quite nice. We have had another text in saying, working on a hate crime survey on campus previously, there has been evidence to indicate that actually students from all backgrounds, including international students, have been affected by Brexit. So we were talking earlier on about the kind of impact that Brexit has had, and I do apologise if at any point we indicated that only international students have been affected. What we were just trying to get at was the different ways in which international students may have been affected, including those from countries that Brexit actually didn't have an impact on, which, as it turns out, applies to all of the panellists here. We're going to go to one more song break now, but before we do, are there any further thoughts on this kind of slightly more serious tone? I mean, Donnie, you've been very kind to kind of ask some kind of questions that maybe we as international, certainly I as an international student host, wouldn't necessarily think to ask. Is there anything that you feel that maybe we could talk about a little bit more? Because remarkably, we're doing very well on time today.
We are doing very well on time. And to be honest, I think that we've covered most of the things that I was interested about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, when we come back, I think we're going to try and take it back to a slightly more lighthearted experience. I certainly have a few very amusing, and by amusing, I mean very cringeworthy, anecdotes to share. But we will be back after this.
On campus and online, this is URN.
Hello and welcome back to the Identity Talk.
Hello.
We are now in the final segment of our International Student Experience episode. And what we realised, one of the things that we as international students have in common, regardless of where we come from, is how clueless some British people seem to be about...
Hey. Don't diss me. I'm joking.
How clueless some British people seem to be about different cultures. And
It's true.
We were kind of sharing some anecdotes about some questions that we got. And Donnie, would you be so kind? Would you like us to kind of relive some of these moments?
Okay, I'm so sorry to have to do this to all of you. I will be the ignorant Brit as I am. So a question that you may have been asked in the past. How good are you with cutlery?
Oh god, I've been asked that so many times. Yeah, because me. So it's in Bangladesh you do eat with your hands. It's almost a skill, something I've actually realised, because there have been a few times where I've gone to Indian or Bangladeshi restaurants and I've eaten with my hands and my friends have just stared at me going, how do you do that? I didn't realise it was a skill. I'm kind of proud of that now. But
I actually want to learn, because I feel like I want to pay homage to the country.
But it's kind of insulting when someone just goes, oh, wow, you know how to use a knife and fork. I mean, really? You didn't think I would know how to use a knife? Well, how do you think I eat a steak? Just grab it and start chewing? It gets... I don't even know how to respond to it sometimes. Just stare at them and go, well, clearly this isn't my first time doing it, or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, have you been asked this, Hima?
Yeah, I have been asked quite a few times. And I had to even explain, why I eat with my hands instead of cutlery.
Yeah.
And I had to give a comprehensive explanation because God has gifted us with 5 fingers and 10 fingers. And you just use them to eat. And that's basically the reason why you eat it with... eat it with hands. Oh, and that's such a simple explanation.
Yeah, and of course, do you use your hands for everything? And I'm just kind of sometimes staring at them like, yes, I use my hands to have noodles and ice cream and everything, which like, I don't. But it's just kind of like, really? In fairness, I can maybe understand them asking it about my own cuisine. Like, do you use cutlery or do you use hands? But when they start asking me every time I go out, like... oh, we're going to have a waffle. Are you comfortable using a knife and fork? No, I'm just going to wolf it down like a savage. You know, I have many feelings about this question.
Okay, next question. Is Indian food spicy food?
No. I would disagree. I mean, Indian food, yes, partially it is spicy, but the main stereotype with Indian food is... the main distinction which I can say about Indian food and, say, Mexican food or some parts of Chinese food is that the Indian food tends to, as I say it, Indian food tends to hit the throat rather than burn the tongue yeah. or lips like Turkish food. And so I think it's the food is spicy but not hot, but what people mean here is the food is hot rather than spicy.
I mean, it's also, there's a massive misconception that there's just one Indian cuisine, isn't there?
Yeah,
like you know, you shared earlier on the episode that you're from South India, and I know from experience how different South Indian food is to East Indian food, which is similar to Bangladeshi food. It kind of gets a bit frustrating when they do that. But I think what makes it even more frustrating is when you then ask them a similar question about British food. Like, oh, we don't have only one cuisine. Like, we don't know that. Your country's like the size of Rajasthan. We could probably have just one cuisine for all we know.
To be honest, I can actually share an experience of this question too, even though I'm a Brit. So like my auntie makes wonderful Persian food, and we had like it was for my cousin's birthday, and she had some friends over who weren't of Iranian origin, and they were like, oh my gosh, that looks so spicy. Is it spicy? No. It is flavorful, man. It is full of herbs. It
yes.
is full of spices. When we say spice, we mean there is taste to it. It's not like a bowl of air.
Yeah.
Okay, but yes, I can kind of understand where you guys are coming from.
Exactly,
it doesn't hit anything. It just hits, you know, the serotonin, man. It releases.
Oh my god, yes.
You know what I mean? It just makes you feel good. I love my auntie's cooking, so shout out.
We can tell.
I could eat it all the time. Anyway, so this question is for you, Valentina. Are you Russian? That sounded really savage, but you know, acting skills.
I know our accent is pretty distinctive. Yes, I could tell. I keep thinking I'm getting better at it, but every time people prove me wrong by asking this question. I wouldn't say it's very offensive, but it seems like they are not aware there are a variety of Eastern European countries right like over there.
It feels like they just kind of go Eastern Europe means
Russia. The most obvious one.
Yeah, well, the biggest one.
Actually, maybe due to age in my boarding school, nobody, like, some people wouldn't even realize what, like, where Ukraine is.
Right.
Or does it, like, exist?
Does it even exist? Yeah.
Like, is it a thing? Or are we still, like, kind of a part of Russia?
Right.
Ooh,
oh, dear.
Okay, so this one, I think, would apply to you, Hemant. Do you speak Indian?
Oh, no.
I cringed.
I think that's the biggest one. I literally don't know what to answer to that question. I mean, do you speak Indian? I mean, Indian is a nationality, not a language.
Thank
They're
you.
Like, nearly, it's, people don't understand that, you know, that India is such a huge country that every single state has its own language. And no, I don't
speak Indian because Indian's not a language. I mean, there are correct me if I'm wrong, but I mean, I believe the Indian Constitution, are there officially 22 like national languages?
I don't think. I mean, recognized? Do you mean or like national or language? Because we don't have a national language.
Well, I mean, languages that are used officially in like on a legal capacity in different states, for example.
Yes, we do. But
on top of that, there are many dialects. There are other regional languages. So
I just think that's fascinating.
And I do. I mean, obviously, nowhere near as offensive because Bangladesh is a lot more homogenous linguistically. But I do sometimes get asked, "Do you speak Bangladeshi?" And like, no, I speak Bengali, not Bangladeshi. Bangladeshi isn't a language. Bangladeshi is a nationality. And it's sometimes interesting how people don't seem to get that, but oftentimes I respond with, no, do you speak British or do you speak English? And sometimes that actually gets through to them. Although at other times, like, no, of course I speak British, I don't speak American. I'm like, oh dear lord, that's what I meant.
I think that's mainly due to different in cultures, because in Ukraine you would say Ukrainian person in Ukrainian language. We just like, probably when we first come here and first experience like meeting people from somewhere else, you do not know how the culture works there.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say it's very offensive.
I do think though that with the Indian question, and I'll disagree a little bit here. In my opinion, I actually think with the whole, do you speak Indian, the question is a little bit offensive. And I think the two reasons for that is India has had such a strong historical connection with the UK that A, people should be more aware. But also, there's so much of Indian culture in Britain due to the film industry, due to food. I do think that asking that in this day and age is a bit like, seriously, have you lived under a rock? Now, we're running a bit close to the end, but I do actually want to turn the tables a little bit, Donnie. I know that you did share earlier on that due to your parents' heritage, you're not quite typically or stereotypically British, but I did want to take a moment to ask you some questions that might be interesting. For example, why do you people like tea so much?
Do you know what? I don't. I like coffee.
Oh, you're not British.
I'm a coffee drinker.
You're not British.
I'm not British, no. But the thing is, I can, like, I get confused by that question anyway because Iranians are literally obsessed with tea.
But
the only difference is we don't do tea with milk. We have black tea.
Why is British tea so flavourless? I'm sorry, that's slightly controversial, but like,
do you know what? It's really funny though, because then literally whenever I go around a family member's house, they're always like, English tea or Irani tea? Irani tea, yes. So there's always the option. But yeah, I don't even know what's the obsession with cats as well. That's probably a universal thing, but
that's a universal
tea and cats.
Thing.
I don't understand. Anything else? Why are we so sarcastic? I do not know.
Yeah,
there's
one
why.
Of those. And also, what's with the whole stiff upper lip thing? I don't even get that. It's just so annoying.
Stiff upper... I'm not very good with idioms or... What is that?
It's like you're too reserved. Like, what is it? Like, you know, you say hello to... Admittedly, Nottingham's a lot friendlier, but if you're in a city like London, you say hello to a stranger on the street, they'll probably call the police because they're like, why are you talking to me?
And they probably will look at you and say what you're looking at.
They do.
That's what they do in my hometown.
What is it with that?
You can't even make eye contact and smile without someone thinking that you're going to attack them.
Why are people so suspicious in this country? I don't understand.
I don't know.
On that slightly...
I'm so sorry, I haven't been able to represent you British students accurately.
But then what is Britishness? If you don't know, listen to our old podcast from a couple of episodes ago. Self-plug. We should wrap up. I do want to take a moment once again to thank our two very lovely guest panellists. So thank you very much, Valentina, and thank you very much, Hemant, for coming on. We've had some interesting discussions. Obviously, this is by no means a comprehensive discussion of the international experience. This isn't even a comprehensive discussion of the Indian, Bangladeshi and Ukrainian experience. But we've raised some points, I hope, that are food for thought. We've had some lovely messages in. Do keep an eye out because the URN news team is going to be covering a few more things surrounding Brexit over the course of the year, one of which, of course, is a much more detailed investigation into how this has affected internationals. It's been a lovely time. Thanks very much for coming on. We hope we can welcome you to radio a bit more often now.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, fun experience, I hope.
Yeah, have you had a good time?
Yeah, first experience and hopefully not last.
Oh, excellent.
Great.